Hey, so I've been thinking a lot lately about the attention economy and this idea of our attention being a commodity these days, something that can be monetized. And sorry about the dog in the background if you can hear that. Speaking of attention, just lost mine, which is actually part of what prompted this, because I have just found myself unable to switch off. Like my attention is just, and yes, I'm ADHD, so attention deficit, it's in the title, but I just find myself really in my phone all the time. I feel really shit about it. I also have noticed that I'm finding it very difficult to be bored at the moment. And I think I've always struggled with boredom a bit, but particularly the last year, if I'm doing nothing, I'm not doing nothing. I'm actually on my phone either scrolling through just content that is not very good for starters. So I'm looking for something that's good, you know, and I'm scrolling and scrolling and scrolling looking for something that isn't controversial. You know, I'm finding myself just so overhearing people's opinions on shit. And when I open up my social media, it's just there. So I've actually found myself doing more like playing games, which is also not that healthy, maybe healthier than the social media algorithm. I don't know, but I just miss boredom. The only time I'm not connected is when I'm actually in person connected with people. I'm not someone who will sit on the phone when I'm with people. Like if I go out for dinner or something with someone, not that I ever do that, but I'm not going to be sitting there on my phone while I'm with other people. It's just not really my style. Also, the other time I'm not doing it is when I'm doing physical exercise. Like if I'm at the gym, I'm not on my phone. I'm actually at the gym in my body. And that is daily for me. So that I'm having moments without that, but I really want to break this fucking habit of just having my attention taken rather than choosing where I give it. And this is by design. I'm not going to blame myself entirely for this because it has been created, particularly and especially for people like me who are naturally short on dopamine and seeking it, you know. So I'm not going to get all like down on myself about it, but I do want to think about how I can reclaim some agency over this because I do see it as a huge issue. I've made lots of notes here, and so there's so much I want to talk about. So I hope I can do this in a coherent, structured way, but we might be bouncing back and forth a bit. I think where I'll start is I actually did some research on attention and the history of attention, right? So back in our mass media phase, attention was always local and it was a finite resource. So attention was shaped by where we lived and who we were around, and news traveled slowly through word of mouth. Entertainment was not available to us at all times, 24/7. We were bored. We got bored and we used our time to create. Right? Like our time was spent making things creating things for our own survival, making meals. And we seem to have like lost touch with those a bit, or at least I guess, well, yes, we have, because modern society, we don't have to source and kill our own food. We can actually literally place an order from Woolies and set a time and drive down and pick it up, or it can be delivered. Like, you know, convenience has actually made us, it feels like it's supposed to be saving us time, but what are we using that time for? Nothing really great. I haven't actually moved to ordering online for food because if I do that, like, that's the one time I might run into humans and have an actual conversation. So if I remove that, then I just become more and more and more insular, and I am already way too insular. So, you know, for me, the inconvenience of going shopping actually sometimes has its benefits. You know, I'm not about to to give myself that convenience and take away something that's actually important to me, which is human connection. And look, to be honest, sometimes I'll walk past someone in the supermarket and see them and be like, oh, I don't have time. I can't be bothered talking to them today. So I'm just going to pretend I didn't see them. But, you know, like overall, I'm going to inconvenience myself in that way because I'd rather do that than just live in a cave. I want to have some human connection, but I'll go through self-checkout. Bit of a contradiction. Anyway, so around the late 1800s, early 1900s, you know, we had mass printing. So newspapers started, we started to see sensational headlines to grab attention because there was some now competition for news. Advertising also became, I guess, attached to circulation. You needed advertisers in order to print things, and in order to make money, you would have to sell the newspaper. So then you would have to find ways to grab people's attention so that they would buy it. And what I guess publishers learned during that period is that fear sells, scandal sells, and novelty sells. And that's really no different to today. And then we look forward into radio and the television era. Broadcast attention from the 1920s to like the 1990s. So now attention kind of becomes centralized, it's scheduled, it's national, it's culturally shared. I just think about like, you know, how it used to work where we would, you know, it'd be 7:30 on a Thursday and Melrose Place would be on. And so we'd work our week around that. And then there'd be lots of conversation around that. Sometimes we'd have parties. I remember when people would come around and we'd watch it together. And there were big moments that were culturally shared. Something would happen on the TV and it would be talked about everywhere. But it was still scheduled. You would still have to go and seek it out. You know, you would sit in front of the TV at the time and you would be fed ads. But there was also a lot less competition. You know, in some places, depending on where you lived, I know we had maybe five channels. We probably had SBS, ABC, 7, 9 and 10 growing up. But if you lived regionally, you probably only had ABC and maybe one other local version of, you know, 9 or 7 or 10. So, you know, we had limited channels. We had more shared viewing experiences. And even before TV in the radio, like that's people used to sit around the wireless and listen to the stories, you know. So we had shared kind of experience. Yeah. And while companies could win people's attention, they couldn't track that attention. So then around the early internet days, I guess the 1990s through to the mid 2000s, we start to get the internet on a more broader, wider, more easily accessible way. And now we have websites that have advertising, we have banner ads. We start to see clickbaity headlines coming in. We start to see the early days of email marketing and SEO culture. But it was still one of those things where we had to opt in. We weren't sitting at our desk 24/7. There was less algorithm at play here. Everything was slower. Dial-up was slow. Speaking of attention, I just saw work text messages come through. And so it grabbed my attention, which is actually leading into this next phase, I guess. Like social media starts in the late 2000s. Actually, it was more like the mid-2000s, 2005 or 2006, I think, was I might have joined Facebook around 2006, 2007. But before that, there was schoolfriends.com. This is when I started to notice that I was becoming distracted by social media. I would spend a lot of time on those websites like School Friends, MySpace. Yeah, and they started to take more and more of my attention. But it still wasn't I still wasn't accessible 24/7 on my phone. Like I think about when I started my business, I would have to be in front of my computer in order to get emails, right? So I would have to plan my day around that. So if I knew that I had work stuff coming on, I wouldn't be able to just go out and do anything. I'd have to kind of sit around and wait for an email to come in. And so those days where I was working, if I went out for the day, I had to kind of make it quick because I had to come back and check my emails, you know, like I wasn't fully contactable. Though if someone needed me and they had my phone number, they could get in touch that way, right? But this is that moment where things start to take a turn. I remember around 2007 when those little hip tops came out. And that I found really handy in one respect because I could get and receive and send emails while I was out and about, which meant that then I wasn't necessarily tied to my desk in the same way. But then, you know, like the BlackBerries started to come out and then the iPhone started to come. And then more and more our attention becomes mobile and it starts to become more constant. We can't unplug in the same way. We don't have to sit down and give our attention to something. Our attention is constantly starting to be pulled, starting to be taken, right? Because it starts to become trackable. It starts to become personalized. They start optimizing it. So we start seeing these platforms start to design themselves for scrolling. We see notifications start coming in. We see reward loops. I remember in the early 2010s, there was a lot of talk about gamification. Like if we were going to create learning content online, it had to be gamified so that we were hooking their attention and keeping it. And that's, I guess, also where the emotional triggers started to seep in. Prior to this, I would say we had media companies competing for your attention. And then around this time, around those early 2010s, is really when we start seeing everyone competing for your attention. Your friends on Facebook, MySpace, from their creators start to emerge and they start also competing for your attention. So let's just go to 2015, last 10 years. This is where we see the algorithm really start to play out. It's where we start to see outrage and controversy performing really well. And so creators and the media start to really double down on that. Our identities start to become content. It's when we, you know, I mean, I started blogging in 2009. I would actually say it's more like 2012 is when we really started to see identity becoming content. And I started this podcast in 2014, and this is, and it was me. My identity became content. And I'm looking to change that a little bit now. I don't want to be content. I want to have an identity and a life outside content. I'm going to do a blend, but like I want to do this more stuff that isn't necessarily based on me and my life and my identity. And then we also start to see the idea of parasocial relationships. We start to form these weird relationships with people who we don't know and they don't know us, but we feel like we know them because we've seen and heard everything about them. And yeah. And then I guess the next step of that is monetization really starts to become tied to attention retention. And this monetization becoming tied in with attention retention leads us to this place where now that our attention is measurable and monetizable, where do morals go? Where does the duty of care sit for humans and their nervous systems? Because this isn't healthy. We're not designed to be constantly yelled at, constantly stimulated, 24/7. The noise just is getting louder and louder. The messaging is getting more and more emotionally intense as everyone is fighting for your attention and to keep it in one place as long as possible. I'm even seeing this in when I'm using ChatGPT. It's constantly trying to get me to come back with another thing and then another thing and asking me a question. Like, it doesn't give me the option to leave. And we can get stuck in that spiral and in that focus, and our attention goes places that we don't even really like. It's all just a big old waste of time, and it's a big distraction. And so now we've got this, like, these algorithms that are actually rewarding more and more outrageous stuff. The more controversial it is, the more that you can get people to disagree with you, the more reach you're going to get. And that leads us to places where this whole Louis Theroux Manosphere documentary, I still haven't recorded an episode on it, but it's like, this is where this leads. It leads to really black and white, controversial, harmful takes becoming mainstream. You know, these used to be dudes that would be, they were the people that you would walk around because they'd be on the street talking to themselves and you'd just be like, walk on the other side of the road to avoid them. But now they're in our phones and they're reaching our children with this messaging before they have built the cognitive ability to be discerning. And it becomes more and more outrageous. That was one of the things that I noticed during the Louis Theroux documentary, was just like how it gets away from you really, really quickly. There was one moment where one of the guys was in the streets of, I don't know, somewhere, Spain or something, and they had set up this prank, I guess, to, it wasn't really a prank, they really should have thought through before they did it, but it was basically, you know, like a pedo watch, and they went up to approach some guy, and then he ended up getting the shit beaten out of him. And it's all on YouTube, you know, for clicks and likes. And like, what is happening to us as a society? But this is what happens when things, when our attention becomes measurable and monetizable. As someone who is marketing something, we need to retain that attention. And the only way we can do it is to go wilder and wilder and wilder. And where does this end up? You know, I think often as a producer, the pressure to come up with that clickbaity title, and I've never really done that. Thankfully, the talent I've worked with hasn't wanted to go to that level. So they're not interested in having clickbaity titles. But like, producers are under increasing pressure to create crazier and crazier and crazier content. You know, you think about maths, what the fuck? Like, you know, there's that documentary I watched recently about America's Next Top Model and how confronting that was. It's pretty crazy to watch it and be like, oh my God, yeah, that's where we were. But also the thing that I noticed was like that, again, that thing, they had to come back and they had to do something crazier and wilder. And so the models are all of a sudden fucking covered in tarantulas and, you know, and so it puts producers in incredibly difficult positions because they're under more and more pressure to create outrageous content. That's not good. That's not good when we're giving shows like Maths our attention. You know, we'll look back and be just as horrified at this as we are when we watch that. Remember, there was also recently another documentary on The Biggest Loser. And you look back and you're like, what? But it happened and we allowed it to happen. And we're now just doing it again in different ways, but even more outrageous ways. It's just something that's on my mind at the moment. And I think about like the impact on our nervous systems. Like we're not built to cope with this. We're not. So like, what is happening when we're just constantly on alert 24/7, which is, you can't not be. You can't open fucking Instagram or TikTok these days and not be bombarded with things that make you feel. They're designed to make you angry. And then what's the impact of that on our relationships with ourselves, with our family and our friends? Because I feel like the last few years have shown us like these algorithms are creating division. And so then that does have an impact on our relationships, because all of a sudden your uncle is a racist and he's spouting all this One Nation bullshit on Facebook, and you lose respect for someone that you loved just because he's been sucked into a fucking algorithm that is just reinforcing confirmation bias for him. And this impacts our personal relationships with people. But what you find is, or what I find is, when I sit down with people and I'm having a one-on-one conversation with them, we can sit down and understand each other. My concern is that this anger and this hatred that unfolds online, because what happens when you see something that creates a reaction in you is you want to react. More and more, we just see all of these, not just outrageous content, but then outrageous responses to the content. There's no consciousness happening there. No one's consciously thinking, do I engage with this or not? Like this is designed to get a reaction out of you. So what happens when we're on our phones for fucking 8 hours a day and constantly having this, yeah, fight or flight response every time we open up our phone, we see something that triggers emotions in us. Like what impact is that having on us physiologically? What is the impact of that? Maybe that's something I'll explore down the track, but like you can't think that's not having an impact on us. And part of the reason I actually wanted to come back to this podcast, and I'm not making it video and I'm not doing social reels on it and I'm not promoting the fuck out of it, is because I'd much prefer this. You consciously get to choose to be here and listen. I'm just sharing thoughts and ideas, like create some nuanced discussion around things so that we're not walking around angry and reactive and distrustful of every person we see. I feel like that's where we're heading if we don't start to be more discerning and create some kind of boundaries for ourselves around this. This morning I went to my GP to get my script refilled. I was asking him, because I've been working with a tech startup who's in the healthcare space for the last few months, I asked him if they were using the product. And we were kind of talking about how, like, even if you want to, you can't really unplug now. We're at that point where it's not like you can just opt out. This is how life works now. Technology is part of it, whether we like it or not, whether it makes things easier or more complicated, it's here and it's not going anywhere. You can't unplug from it because our lives are reliant on it. And that's what makes it even more difficult, right? Because it's so embedded in just everything we do now, particularly when you have kids. If you aren't on WhatsApp, then you can't get the updates as to where the kids' game is this weekend. Even school notifications come through an app. Like everything is communicated through our phones, which means that it's impossible for us to really completely unplug. Otherwise, we will be removed from society. So that makes it even more difficult to draw these boundaries, because we do need to be using our phones. In the past, when I've noticed like a bit of a behavioral, unhealthy behavior cropping up in my life, I will put in like small guardrails. So for example, I knew that I was drinking a lot back in my early mid-20s. And I could see that could potentially become a problem for me. And now I understand why I drank so much. It was because I was undiagnosed autistic and ADHD. And so I was just trying to like numb life a little bit. And the stats around autistic people and addiction are frightening. And I didn't know I was autistic, but I did know that I have quite an addictive personality. I've always been very careful to put in like these small little guardrails. So with drinking, I was still binge drinking the fuck out of life, but I had some small rules that I think probably saved me in some respects. And they were no drinking alone ever and no wine on weeknights, although I didn't drink wine, but you know what I'm saying. Like unless I was at a dinner or at a function, I wasn't going to be drinking during the week. I just knew that if I did that, I would fall into the habit of doing that. And so before it happens, I create these little guardrails for myself. I did the same thing with smoking, actually, another terrible habit I had for many years. Sometimes that one would creep up on me and I'd break the rules, but I generally would be quite good at sticking to them because they made sense and they were rules that I had created for myself. If someone else told me not to smoke, actually, that's why I started smoking, was that I had this very controlling boyfriend and I had never smoked a cigarette. I thought they were disgusting. I had vowed never to smoke a cigarette in my entire life. And when I was maybe 22 or 23, I was dating this guy. And one night I was out and I was partying very hard. Actually, I must have been even older than that. I must have been like 23 or 24. And I took a cigarette and started to take a drag on it. And he ripped it out of my mouth and broke it in half. And then he didn't talk to me for like, I don't even know, like 2 weeks or something. When we broke up, I bought a packet of cigarettes and drove past his house smoking a cigarette because I was just like, you don't have control over me. So basically I ended up fucking myself by picking up smoking as a habit. But I did it because someone else had told me not to and tried to have that control over me. It's that classic, you know, PDA profile, pathologic demand avoidance, where you tell me what to do, I'll tell you to fuck off and I'm not going to do it. But if I create those rules for myself, then I can generally do a better job at sticking to them. And so, yeah, I used to have these little hacks. They're not really hacks, but like I would just have these little rules where it's like you can smoke cigarettes, but you can't smoke a cigarette until it's a PM time. And I mean, like, so after 4 PM is when you can have a cigarette. And at some points in my life, I didn't stick to that. But when I had those rules in place, I wouldn't. And it kind of sounds contradictory. But anyway, what I noticed and why I'm telling you this is because for the most part, these kind of rules do work for me. But I think the difference in this particular instance is that this has crept up on me. And it's actually even more dangerous than the alcohol and the cigarettes because with a phone, it's actually just a societal requirement. So that the addiction of it kind of just creeps up on you a bit and then you have less control because you don't even know it's a problem because it's just the way everyone lives. And so I was thinking, what if I could create some little guidelines for myself? What if I could create like nothing too major? Because when it's too big and too scary, it's not like you're not going to see change by changing unless you're a particular person, style of person. You're not going to make that kind of rapid change overnight. It's just too difficult. But what you can do is like make these small incremental changes, and the smaller the better, because it's just about seeing that you can get some rungs on the board and that something's working, and then you can kind of expand on that. And that's the way I find, anyway, habits are best broken, you know. And so I just was thinking to myself, how could I create some better guidelines for myself around this now that I recognize that it is a problem and I'm addicted to it. I'm not consciously choosing to go on my phone. It's happening automatically. So how could I create some guardrails around this for myself? So I just ate lunch. And this might seem absolutely ridiculous and really small, but a habit that I've gotten into is I get my lunch, I sit at my dining table, I have my food, I have my drink, I have my phone, and I scroll. And I thought, what if I instead took a notepad and a pen and my food? and I put my phone on charge away from me so I can't just accidentally grab it. Let's see what happens. I sat there with my pen and my notepad and I ate lunch and I just spent time with myself. I wrote some notes, did a little bit of kind of journaling, and I thought, oh, I've actually missed this. I've actually missed just being with myself. I like that feeling. And when I think about the times where I felt the most connected and present in my life, it has been those times where I've been floating in the pool, looking at the sky, walking on the beach and looking at the ocean. And I've just been bored, or what I thought was bored, in a moment by myself. But they're actually the moments I feel the most amazing. Why would I sit there and look at my phone and eat lunch when I could just sit there and be with myself? That's what I'm going to do. I've decided, if I can remember, to create that little guardrail. That is, lunch is for you. No phone, phone on charge, away from you. Just be with yourself. I think what's going to happen is I'm going to realize how much I do like being with me on my own without the distraction. And then hopefully I can expand that out. No phone on the toilet. Just be with your poo. I've fallen into the habit of thinking that I'm using my phone as a tool of like regulating myself, or like I'm really using my phone to numb myself the way that I would use alcohol in the past to numb myself in my early 20s. But I don't need to, because I actually, without it, I'm good. I'm good. What other times could I put my phone down? But I don't want to go like a bull at a gun and just fucking put in all these really hectic big measures in place. I want to build evidence for how my life can be better without this, but in small incremental ways, so that I'll actually want to, and it's not a punishment. It's something I'm doing to better my life and my experience. So yeah, that's where I'm at. That's a small change I'm going to try to implement. No food and phone. I either am eating food or I'm on my phone, but not both at the same time. We could do that, right? Anyway, I just did it. I proved to myself that I can do it. And not only that, but I proved to myself I fucking enjoy it a lot more, because I'm not bored. I'm actually not bored. There's so much rich thought happening in my brain. And I'm missing all of that. You know, I've been talking about how I feel so disconnected from my voice. I think it's because I'm just consuming everyone else's all the time, instead of prioritizing my own. So yeah, maybe that's something you want to implement yourself. No food and phone at the same time. Maybe there's another way that you notice that you're just numbing yourself out. But actually, we're not numbing ourselves out. You know, that's the interesting thing. I think about the whole cigarette thing, right? Like, I used to say, I'm just taking a break, you know, like I'm just taking some downtime. That's why I smoke. Like, it relaxes me, when physiologically it did not relax me. The same way the phone does not relax me. It just creates more stimulation, more stress on my nervous system. It's not relaxing. Sitting there, eating my lunch with no phone and a pen and paper, or not even a pen and paper. The pen and paper is just the replacement for the phone right now. Because it's like, you know, when you would stop smoking, they'd say just have a pen in your mouth and pretend you're smoking. You know, you need like some kind of replacement tool short term. Well, that's what the pen and paper is right now. It's just like a replacement tool while I find the evidence that, yeah, this actually is enjoyable, and it's more enjoyable than sitting there wasting my fucking life scrolling other people's opinions on social media. Boring. All right, that's it. Peace out.